This is Florida Matters. I'm Steve Newborn. We're all living in a whole new world out there, the world of COVID-19 or the coronavirus or the world of social distancing, whatever you want to call it, it's a world of isolation. The market changes in our daily routines and the resulting isolation can affect people's mental health in a lot of ways. Whether you're home alone, with a sick family member, or with kids out of school, isolation can increase stress and anxiety. So just what is happening out there, and better yet, is there anything we can do about our mental health? We'll get a little insight from Clara Reynolds. She's president and CEO of the Crisis Center of Tampa Bay. Thanks for being with us, Clara.
Thank you, Steve, so much. It's truly an honor to be here.
Thank you. I appreciate it. So, Clara, have your phones been ringing off the hook lately?
Steve, our phones have been ringing beyond off the hook. I mean, let's just call it that. We started tracking COVID-specific related calls starting the week of February 29th, and we have been tracking those on a weekly basis. And since that time, when we started with 14 calls from individuals who are really concerned about how this virus was going to impact them or their family members, we are now at a place where we're getting anywhere, you know, in excess of 700 or 800 calls a week specifically related to COVID-19 and a variety of issues. What again started off as folks being stressed and concerned for their friends and family has absolutely transitioned to financial concerns. How am I going to keep the roof over my head? How am I going to feed my family? How am I going to teach my kids and try to work a full-time job? And so all of those things have really impacted the individuals who are calling us for help and support.
How many calls do you normally get in a, if there is anything such as a typical week? How much has it increased?
We certainly have seen increases looking month over month. We looked at March of 2019 versus March of 2020, and we did see a significant spike in calls. And certainly folks looking for financial assistance has far surpassed anything that we have seen in the past. So we have experienced incredible call volume, and not just call volume. Normally, we'll spend about 7 minutes with a caller, you know, working through all sorts of issues. Folks call us with symptoms oftentimes, and the symptom is whatever is the top need at the moment. So one of the things that our staff does, utilizing an evidence-based model called motivational interviewing, is that we really try to get to the root of what's going on with individuals. If we just start trying to solve for symptoms, we're normally not getting to the root of the problem. So that usually takes us about 7 minutes. We're now seeing calls in the excess of 15 to 20 minutes because people are calling us with financial issues, but they have so much stress, so much anxiety going on. It takes us about 15 minutes to help to de-escalate them, to really get to what is the most pressing need today. I think what has been so unbelievable for us at the Crisis Center of Tampa Bay has been the impact that this virus has had across our community. So where we were able to have callers and work through those problems, utilizing resources that they have within their families, within themselves, maybe some informal support, all of those are so taxed. And so we're having to work with individuals and say, okay, let's talk about what we can do today to help meet your needs and also help them understand that new resources and supports are coming online every single day, and also to manage their expectation, because while they are in an absolute state of crisis, helping them understand that we're all in the same place together may mean that your wait times are going to be longer. It's going to take more diligence of doing things over and over again. We just have to reinforce those messages and tell folks at the end of the call, the resources that we know of today are available today, but call us back tomorrow. Something new may come on board. And that has tended to help reduce some of the stress and anxiety that individuals are feeling as well.
First, I think we should probably give a rundown of what y'all do, the Crisis Center of Tampa Bay. Give us a little rundown. How many people are there? How long you've been around? That sort of thing.
The Crisis Center of Tampa Bay has been in our community for over 40 years. We are the community's gateway to help, hope, and healing in a time of crisis. The way to get access to that gateway is a very simple number. It's 211. We also partner with the National Suicide Prevention Helpline. So if somebody calls the 1-800-273-TALK because they're thinking about suicide, those calls ring directly into us. We also have lines specific for veterans. We run the state substance abuse hotline. We have programs for parents of very young children. That's sponsored by the Children's Board of Hillsborough County. Also programs for teens and young adults that are struggling with some behavioral health issues. We're also the community's rape crisis center. So if somebody is raped in Hillsborough County, they do not go to area hospitals. They physically come to our location at Bears in Florida. And for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, we provide all the medical services necessary, including all of the forensic examinations. We provide trauma counseling to individuals that have experienced some sort of trauma here at the crisis center and in three other locations across the community. And we also partner with City of Tampa, Tampa Fire Rescue, to provide 911 basic life support ambulance service in Hillsborough County. And that has seen an increase because of COVID-19 at the start. We are now partnering with the county to do remote testing for individuals that cannot go to collection sites to be tested for COVID-19. We're actually going into people's homes to be able to provide that service and support. So we've tried to respond as much as we possibly can to COVID-19, but no matter what, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, anybody can get help and support here at the Crisis Center of Tampa Bay.
You're just not people sitting there in your office, you know, with a phone hooked up to your eardrums. You're actually going out there into homes where people might have the coronavirus. Do you have the PPEs as personal protection equipment that everybody says is in such short supply?
We have been partnering very closely, not only with the county and our emergency operations center, but we've also been working with the community. I will tell you, the community has been unbelievable. We actually had an individual who has a son who's an engineering student who created 50 face shields utilizing a 3D printer and donated all of that to us. We have a doctor who is working to secure additional masks and gowns, gloves. The University of Tampa, USF, construction companies have been donating N95 masks for our staff. So we have been quilting together PPE. Do I believe there's enough? Heavens no. We're just like everybody else. But we've tried to utilize our donors and individuals who support the Crisis Center to think about different ways that they can help us. And the community has really stepped up. So while we can always use more, we really feel like we have been able to meet some of the needs that we have.
Wow, it sounds like there's a lot of love out there. You were mentioning all these other things you do, the rape crisis, suicide, which we'll talk about in a little bit too. First of all, do you have enough people to handle all these calls? And are you able to devote enough time to these, I hate to say it, everyday problems that people have on top of what we're seeing right now with the coronavirus?
You asked about call volume before, and I will, you know, reference that last week we had 1,758 calls that came in. Of those, 678 were specifically related to COVID-19. So you could see we still had over 900 individuals calling us for different needs, and we're still able to provide all of those levels of support. I will tell you, though, one of the things that we are seeing for the very first time, though, is people having wait times in our queue system. Our goal is to answer 85% of the calls within 30 seconds or less. And I will tell you that the call answer rate has decreased somewhat, and the amount of time that folks are having to spend on the phone has increased to the point that we've had to implement a callback feature. We are experiencing tremendous call volume. If you want to hold your place in the queue, then we can go in and call you. So we've had to employ that for the very first time. Understanding, though, that suicide calls take precedent over any call. So if there's a suicidal caller that is calling on the 800 number, those get top priority. We will meet those needs immediately. But it is definitely stressed. I definitely don't have enough people. This is not a job, though, that you can just take an average person off the street to come in and do this. Vicarious trauma is something that we deal with in these calls. You know, when you're reaching out to call to us, you are at your wit's end. So this requires a lot of training, a lot of supervision to make sure that we're taking care of the caller as well as the person answering the calls.
Clara, you mentioned you all have to really be a jack of all trades, but you specifically mentioned the big increase in the number of financial problems. I would imagine a lot of these people are laid off of work. They're, you know, restaurant workers, people who work in small businesses, and on top of being stuck in their homes and not having a lot of contact with the world, they're cut off from their job, their whole work life too. How difficult is it to deal with people like that?
We spend a lot of time with callers talking about the need for self-care. What do you do that brings you joy? And so often the things that do that for individuals, like being able to go out with friends, maybe going to a movie, we just can't do them right now. So we're having to help folks think about, okay, what are some other ways that you can take care of yourself, help you to make yourself feel better in this very enclosed environment? And so looking at, do you like to read? Do you like to sew? Do you like to cook? Can you get out and just take a lap around your apartment complex or around your neighborhood? Are there ways that you can create those opportunities that are different from what you've done in the past, but maybe can bring you some joy? We want to remind everybody that while this is a very, very serious virus, we're all in this together, and we're going to get on the other side of this. But in the meantime, we all have to take ownership for doing whatever we need to do to keep ourselves safe, to keep ourselves grounded, keep our families together. And so we're brainstorming around other ways that folks can find those places, those outlets during a very stressful time.
A lot of the tips I've been reading up online are like, all right, we've got all this free time now, so finally you've got time to do the things you've always wanted to do, right? Learn a new language, you know, write that big novel that's been rolling around in your head. Learn to play the piano. But when people hear things like that, right, and maybe they just can't get up that kind of energy to renew their lives, is that unrealistic and can lead them to feeling like they're a failure?
Oh, absolutely. I will tell you, even being in the office myself, I kept thinking the same thing of, oh, I'm going to have all this time. I'm emotionally drained. This virus has taken its toll, I think, emotionally on everybody. And I think that's one of the other messages that we tell callers. It is perfectly normal that you are exhausted. It is perfectly normal that your sleep is disruptive. All of these things are normal. So don't expect yourself to be the super person. Don't expect yourself to suddenly take on all of these projects and then consider yourself a failure because you don't have the energy to do that. It takes a lot of emotional energy to be able to be isolated every single day, to listen to the media talking about this virus every single day. It takes a toll on individuals. So we tell folks, you know what? Let's talk about some really small wins. You want to clean out a closet. You don't have to start with the 5,000 square foot closet. Maybe you just clean out a drawer first, because success in the small things will then give you the energy to take on some of the bigger things. So we really encourage folks, don't think that you're going to write this, you know, the big novel, as you mentioned. Maybe it's just, I'm going to sit down and actually type a few words today. That's going to be my goal. Create little goals every single day, but make them small enough that you're going to be able to achieve them, because those successes will then help give you the emotional energy to be able to take on larger ones moving forward. It's kind of like training for a marathon. You don't go out and lace on your shoes and run 26 miles in a day. Maybe it's you lace up your shoes and you step outside the door. Woohoo! That's day one. But creating those small wins not only will help you develop the stamina to be able to do it, but it's also going to help you to feel better because you've accomplished something.
This is Florida Matters. Clara Reynolds is president and CEO of the Crisis Center of Tampa Bay. We're talking about how our new world of social distancing and social isolation is changing everyone's life, and many times not for the better. Clara, children haven't been in school since before spring break, and the governor just extended the closing of brick and mortar schools for the rest of this school year, which means a lot of parents not only have the social isolation, but they're basically stuck inside their homes with their kids until the fall. What advice can you give these harried parents that this too shall pass?
Yeah, and I'm in that same boat. I have a high school junior, and so I completely support, commiserate all of those words with all of the parents out there that are trying to do a multitude of jobs that they never thought they were going to have to do. Being a remote workforce, now you're part-time teacher, you're also the cheerleader, you're also the sports coach, you're the music instructor, you're the dance instructor, you're all of these roles now that you never thought you'd have to do. What we tell parents is you can only do what you can do. There is no expectation that you're going to replicate a six-hour school day while these children are at home. There's just no way that you can do it. Sitting down with your children and having some conversations with teachers as well of going, okay, what realistically are we going to be able to accomplish during this time, during this day, during this week? And for those of us that do have children that enjoy video games, some of it is going to be, okay, we're just going to have to let some of this go, because video games are not just an outlet for their creativity. For many of them, it is the only way that they are able to interact with their peers. I have a son. He is interacting with his peers on 2K basketball, and that is as important for him, that outlet of being able to talk with friends for his behavioral health, as completing his academic assignments. So I think it's creating some new opportunities within your family about how are you going to balance this need for social interaction in this social isolation time with needing to get academic work done. And that's going to be a balance that every family is going to have to juggle. But what we tell folks is that don't expect that you're going to be the perfect teacher. Don't expect that you're going to replicate the perfect classroom environment for your kiddo. You're not. There's just no way you can do it. You're going to do the very best that you can. And everybody recognizes that families are going to do the very best that they can with the resources that they have available.
It's interesting. My kids seem to be taking this a lot easier than I am. I mean, maybe just kids are more resilient than parents are. Their parents have these routines that they're so locked into. It's harder for us to deal with these unexpected changes that we can't control.
Yes, while on the outside, kids may be doing okay, and they may be vocalizing that they're doing okay. But I think it's really important to look at those nonverbal cues. Is your child eating more than they normally do? Is their attention span maybe longer or shorter than it normally is? Are you sure that they're getting full sleep? So it may be that while on the outside, they're like, yeah, all things are cool, everything's great. You may want to make sure that you're looking for those additional nonverbal cues and talking with your child about it. Kids are resilient, they are very adaptive, but if they don't think that you're in a place where you can handle hearing anything else, they will internalize a lot of things that will come out in their external, come out in eating, sleeping, socializing, those kinds of things. So I think having these dialogues are really important with your children of all ages. And again, you think about our seniors. They are experiencing something that no senior class has ever had to experience, and such a tremendous loss of a celebration of a milestone in their life. And trying to help these kids be able to cope and deal with that, I think is so important as well. And I think it's important for all of us as parents to recognize that this is impacting our kids, even if they don't have the verbal language to talk about it.
So we need to be able to pick up on those kind of visual clues and be a school psychiatrist as well as everything else we're doing?
Yes, add that to the list of therapist, mentor, Sherpa, whatever words you want to use. And I'm not saying that you've got to analyze and psychoanalyze, but just make sure you're checking in.
Clara, it's interesting the way you just use the word Sherpa. These are the native Nepalese who help people trek up the Himalaya Mountains, a really hard road with a little low oxygen, that sort of thing. That's a good analogy here. This is really a long, hard road that we have to take one step at a time. Is that really the best way of looking at this whole thing?
Absolutely. And we're all in this together, and we've never been through anything like this before. So, you know, I think all of us are trying to do our very best with the skill sets that we have. You think about our community resources, our nonprofit community, our governments, they've never experienced anything like this either. So I think all of the natural helpers that are out there are as stressed as everybody else and trying to meet the needs that are just so many in our community.
You mentioned earlier the amount of calls that you've been getting have been a huge spike in financial calls. You know, I'm one of those fortunate people. I'm sitting at home. I can telecommute. I still have my job. Some estimates are 30, 40% of the working populace out there have lost their jobs. And a lot of these people are poor. They don't have the education to just pop into another job. Basically, they're living paycheck to paycheck. What advice can you possibly give somebody like that who doesn't have any money? Their government stimulus check is all that's coming in, which isn't going to last long. Right. What can you possibly tell these people to tell them to hang in there?
Yeah, that's a big piece of what we're doing. Thinking about some of the stories that we have gotten here at the Crisis Center of Tampa Bay, we received a call from a woman who was concerned about housing. She had been living with her mom. Her mom passed away. The housing was about to be foreclosed on. So she was calling us in absolute desperation. She was calling us about the housing. But as you kind of went through the story, you understood that it's much more than housing. You know, this is a woman who's lost her mother, who's not going to be able to bury her in the way that she would have wanted to be able to do. Turned out her husband was a veteran. And so we were able to quilt together some veteran services that they normally wouldn't have thought that they'd be eligible for or need, but that was the key to getting into housing. And so I think when callers call us in their hour of desperation, what we're doing is we're brainstorming with them about, okay, what are some things about yourself that you may not have thought about, like the fact that you've got a family member who's been in the military? You suddenly now are eligible for services and supports that you didn't even realize that you were. So that's a lot of the work that we're doing. We're also seeing callers, though, that would never have considered themselves poor, that maybe were making $200,000, $250,000 a year, but they've lost their job at the beginning of this. They don't have the savings. And they're not eligible for stimulus checks. They're not eligible for a lot of these other social services. So we're having to really work with them to think about, okay, what are some transferable job skills? What does your network look like? Is there an opportunity for you to maybe barter or trade, working with your landlords, working with your mortgage companies? Let's talk about the language that you need to use with your mortgage company or with your landlord so that you can stay in your house. Once you're in your house, let's not worry about that. Let's worry about how we're going to now deal with TECO. Okay, let's give you language about how you can work with TECO. This is not a, you know, here's three resources, good luck to you. This is really a thoughtful way of walking through an assessment, a strengths assessment, if you will, to help people identify, one, what do they have? But the key, honestly, Steve, is that you're giving people hope. That's one of the most important things that we can give each of these individual callers, because folks are calling us in desperation. They don't have any hope. And if you don't have hope, you're not going to be able to get yourself out of the situation that you're in. So we are working to build on those blocks of hope. And those blocks will build one on top of the other, on top of the other, to get folks to a place where they can think beyond this crisis that they're in right now to the potential and the possibilities that do exist.
Clara, earlier you mentioned all the numbers of calls you've been having about suicide. It's really become one of the leading causes of death in this country. It's in the top 10, I believe. It's a topic that's near and dear to me. I've had personal experience with this in my immediate family. The suicide has been associated with tough economic conditions, including unemployment. Are we seeing an uptick in calls about this?
So I will tell you, last week, we had 48 suicide calls just related to COVID-19. We will typically get here at the Crisis Center between 8 and 10 calls every day from people here in Hillsborough County who are contemplating suicide. They're along a continuum. They're either thinking about it, or in some cases, they've actually gone ahead and swallowed a bottle of pills, and we're actually going to do active rescue with them. We have not seen a spike. Why? We believe because people are just dealing in the crisis of the moment, the economic crisis, the food crisis, all of those things are taking precedent right now. However, when we get on the other side of COVID-19, we are expecting, as the entire behavioral health community is, and a crisis like we've never seen before, of substance use, of suicidal ideation, of behavioral health problems like we've never seen, because humans were not meant for long-term isolation. Humans were not meant for a 6 to 8 week complete shutdown of our communities. And we believe that those individuals who are holding it together right now, once we get to the other side, are going to completely fall apart. So we are working with our other behavioral health partners to prepare for that onslaught that we believe is going to come post COVID-19.
Wow. Yeah, good luck with that. I can only wish you the best of luck in the world getting the amount of people and the supplies and all the resources that you need. Which leads me to basically my final question here. I mean, how are you doing? How are your counselors doing? I mean, after all, you're going through the same stresses that the rest of us are, plus you have to deal with everybody else's travails all day. I mean, do you have to get counseling too?
Oh, we do a lot of self-care here at the Crisis Center of Tampa Bay. That is part of our DNA. It is a pillar of our organization, is a normative culture, and that culture really revolves around self-care. So we spend a lot of time, even particularly now that we have remote workforce, those folks are so isolated in their homes that used to be a sanctuary for them. We have now brought in all of the community's problems, all of the community's issues into their sanctuary space. So we're actually doing more face-to-face supervision via Zoom and Microsoft Teams than we did when people were in office. We're doing a lot of check-ins. We are doing a lot of group teaming. We are doing IM so that if you do get a suicidal caller, you're IMing immediately with a supervisor who is providing that that backup for you. So we are truly experiencing that on our 911 side and our TransCare. We are spending tremendous amounts of time working with staff, helping them manage the fact that they are going out into people's homes that they don't know if they're COVID-19. And they're bringing home on their person, oftentimes, virus that they weren't even aware of. We have had a positive COVID-19 staff member that actually contracted the virus. That staff member is on the road to recovery, did not have to be hospitalized, but that resonated through the entire organization. So when you have somebody test positive, all of a sudden this becomes real. And so working through that, as the CEO, I provide daily, even on the weekends, updates of what is happening around COVID-19, what's happening nationally, state, locally, what resources are coming online, because we also know that our staff, while they are very fortunate and will have paychecks, many of their spouses have lost their jobs. And so they have become now the sole breadwinner of the organization, of their family, of their household. So we're trying to provide them with additional resources and supports so that they can support their families. Again, it's kind of like the analogy of you're on an airline and you know you're flying and the oxygen mask, you got to put your oxygen mask on first before you put it on anybody else. We really believe that here. That is a mantra here at the Crisis Center of Tampa Bay. And so we work very hard to try to take care of not just our frontline staff, but all the people that are supporting the frontline staff. Everybody here is considered an essential service. So we're working diligently. Our board of directors is working diligently to make sure that everybody has the physical and emotional resources they need to continue to do this job, again, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Wow, Clara, thank you so much for giving oxygen to people out there who really need it in our time of need. Clara Reynolds is president and CEO of the Crisis Center of Tampa Bay. You can reach them by calling 211. Clara, thank you and your people for everything you do, and thank you for taking part in Florida Matters.
Thank you so much, Steve. And again, to your entire WUSF community, thank you all so much for all you do and for being a part of this community.
That's it for today's show. You can read more about the work of the Crisis Center of Tampa Bay, as well as links to get help in this time of isolation, on our website at wusfnews.org. I'm Steve Newborn. Thanks for listening to Florida Matters.